Welcome to Careers in Your Ears, a careers podcast for PhD students and research staff at King's College London. I'm Vicky Tipton, a careers consultant for researchers here at King's College. For today's episode, I'm joined by Dr. Nicola Leveringhouse, a lecturer in the War Studies Department here at King's College. A very warm welcome to you, Nicola.
Thanks, Vicky. Warm welcome to you too.
Nice to be here with you. So we met originally because you're the departmental lead for Careers Week work with undergraduates and postgraduate students in the War Studies Department. But I imagine you have many different roles and responsibilities under the title of lecturer. So could I ask you to start by describing what you do in more detail?
Sure. My job, I guess you could say, consists of three main roles. Mm-hmm. The first of these is the one that's probably best known to the outside world, which is probably teaching. Yeah. So the teaching of courses, students, and it's not just classroom time, it's also supervision of PhDs, mm. students, MA students, undergraduate students when they have dissertations, marking and meeting them outside of classroom times. Mm. So that's sort of the teaching role. And then the second role is research, which is actually the one that's probably less well understood about being an academic. Mm. And it's the one that is the one that probably keeps us awake at night more, because it's the one that is very important for career development, especially if you want to be an academic. And it's very difficult to juggle with the other roles, teaching in particular, because research is quite time intensive.
Yeah.
And the third role is administration, which again is something that's not normally well known about being an academic. Mm. Most academics, unless they're super senior, won't have their own secretary, for instance. So you have to do all the admin for your own research, usually, and for your own courses on your own. You have to learn how to manage a budget, for instance, those kind of things, which you might not necessarily have done before.
Yeah.
And of course, there's general administration. So my role, for instance, here at King's in the career side is an administration.
Yeah.
Is an administration role, and then you have general administration duties, attending staff meetings, those kind of things, really. Mm. Of course, these three roles often overlap each other, and there's a blurry lines, right? So, for instance, if you're organising events or you're attending conferences and doing certain things, these might overlap the administration research roles too.
They come together.
Exactly.
In essence.
Yeah.
Okay. And so from that kind of broad range of activities, what would you say you find particularly exciting about being in academia, and what perhaps is a bit more challenging?
I think the most exciting thing about academia is the independence you get. And I'm not sure that you get this in all careers outside of academia. The independence to think and to come up with ideas and topics that you want to research, you have more control as an academic, and that's very exciting. Sometimes it's difficult during term to actually get the time to think. But outside of term, we often get that precious time to think. And that's one of the most exciting things about being an academic, having that independence to and that creativity around thinking and developing ideas. I think the most challenging thing is really learning how to juggle those three roles that I just mentioned. I think that's very difficult, especially for an earlier career junior academic, because I think you're not really quite aware of those other roles when you enter into this career. And so I think that's a big challenge. I think if you haven't got any teaching experience, teaching can be a big challenge because it's so very different from research, and the other, and those two roles are quite different. Even if you bring your research into the classroom, the actual act of teaching is very different to the act of research. Mm. So that can be challenging too.
Mm. And actually that leads on to the next question I suppose I had in my mind, and you've pointed to it a couple of times, the fact that it's a bit of a juggle working out the time that you spend researching and teaching, and that time to think about your research comes in the term time. So I suppose I was wondering, broadly, what amount of time do you spend researching versus teaching? And I suppose a secondary question to that, was that obvious from the job description when you applied for this job, or perhaps other roles that you had before this?
Sure. I mean, I think I'm still learning, and I'm still hopefully getting better on that score.
I think that's nice for people to hear, isn't it? We're looking for a career in academia.
I often actually ask for tips from more senior academics and from mentors that I have, how they do it to improve. So, for instance, learning how to manage your time is always a skill that constantly needs developing, I think, as an academic. So learning, you know, trying to get, for instance, as much of marking, for instance, done before the holiday seasons, and so that you can then use the holiday seasons for research.
Mm.
And because academic research demands uninterrupted, concentrated periods of time. You can't do it quickly and you can't do it in an interrupted fashion.
Mm.
So trying to sort of create those blocks of time and that space of uninterrupted time where you won't be bothered by marking, by students emailing you, is so you have to be very good at sort of learning how to do that. And that doesn't always come so easily. At least I'm still learning on that on that score. For my job here at King's, I think most universities now are quite open about the sort of multitasking aspect of being an academic now. So they pretty much always relate, you know, they always talk about these three different roles in the job descriptions. I think in reality and in practice, term time is often, it's often impossible to actually fulfill all three roles in an equal manner. So you end up probably doing much more teaching and admin than you would do research in any term time period. That's not necessarily always reflected in job descriptions, but that's sort of the practical reality of the job, wherever you are, I think, actually, in academia.
And then it's a personal approach to...
Yeah, learning strategies and ways of sort of managing your time. But and of course, there are other things outside of your job that are demanding on your time too, right?
So Exactly. And yeah, I suppose that's the other kind of balance, isn't it, that we could think about. Do you think it is easy for academics to strike a good work-life balance?
I would say academics are probably pretty poorly placed to strike a work-life balance, in large part because they come to academia from having done a PhD, which is such a strange experience and so personal and so lonely in many respects, even if you have a great supervisor or set of supervisors and a great cohort. It's still a relatively sort of singular experience.
Yes.
And it's one which is so all-consuming as well of your time. There's no 9-to-5 aspect to it, even if you try, really, because you're constantly thinking about generally a very small, narrow subject, right? So it's not even there is multitasking involved, but it's not of the type that prepares you for a career, right? So a PhD is in a way such an all-consuming affair that you do. It's very easy to lose that work-life balance, and I think that's a great risk, right? And a big challenge for PhD students is trying to maintain that, right? And I think once you've gone through that process and you start a career in academia, then it becomes a new challenge of trying to sort of manage different roles and not having suddenly that time that you did. So you had an opposite problem as a PhD student of having too much time almost to focus on a singular issue. When you become an academic, you don't have that time anymore. And so that transition becomes quite difficult.
That's a really interesting insight. Yeah. So almost PhDs could help themselves by starting to think about a work-life balance during their PhD.
I think so. And I think supervisors, I think they should try and help encourage their students to think about beyond simply completing their PhD and in a timely manner and obviously performing well in the viva and also setting themselves up for a good career. Also think about their more general sort of work-life balance because that will carry them through for an academic career if that's what they want eventually.
Yeah. So start it earlier.
Yeah, I think so.
So I suppose changing tack slightly, we've talked a little bit about your role currently, but looking backwards, could you describe your journey from the PhD to this lecturing position?
I mean, I think I was very lucky in the sense I had a quite linear journey.
Okay.
And I appreciate that a lot of... you know, early career academics like myself have had it probably much harder. Part of the reason I had it, I think, slightly easier is that my topic is very popular at the moment. So I work on China and East Asia. And when I started working on that topic, it wasn't necessarily the big thing.
Right.
And I didn't pick it for that reason. In fact, I wouldn't encourage PhDs to pick topics because they're hot right now in general. But I was to say, I was lucky in that this is a topic and an area where actually the UK has very few experts, and so there is a need, there's a gap, as it were, right? So I think that explains slightly why it's been easier for me. But I would say I've done a pretty average and normal journey. So for instance, I did, I finished my PhD and then I got a postdoctoral fellowship with the British Academy. And that was a 3-year fellowship. And that's pretty normal now. You don't usually move from a PhD straight into a permanent position. Mm. So you usually do 3 years or so, or even longer. I mean, I know people 3 to 6 or 7 years of postdoctoral fellowships. And that period can be a very insecure period because obviously they're not permanent positions. Some people even have a collection of, say, 1-year fellowships in different parts of the country or different parts of the world. So that can, again, make the work-life balance very difficult if you have a partner and family and so forth. That period between the finishing of the PhD and getting a permanent post is highly insecure. And that is the period that is very deflating because you've worked so hard to get the PhD. As I said, it's quite a private enterprise, even if you do have good support and supervision. And in my case, I had fantastic supervision. But still, it's one where you finally achieve the goal of the PhD. It's been your sort of singular goal for so many years. And then you have the sudden new challenge of finding a permanent position in academia, and that is very difficult. And as I say, some of my friends, it's taken them 6 or 7 years to get to a permanent position. And of course, this is such a change of the academic career and the landscape around it, because, you know, 20, 30 years ago, you didn't even need a PhD to become a lecturer, an academic, you know, with a permanent position. So things have changed dramatically, and what's demanded now from a PhD student is much, much greater than, as I say, 20, 30 years ago. So you have to sort of, I think, go into a PhD if you want to get an academic career, sort of knowing that you're going to have to be incredibly resilient and it's going to be really tough.
Yes.
Particularly once, even though it's tough enough to get the PhD, once you've got the PhD, the next step to a permanent academic position is quite tough. But anyway, going back to my experience, I was very lucky. I got the British Academy Fellowship, and then I got a permanent position at Sheffield. I spent a year there, and then I came here to King's for another position. So I've been, as I say, fairly lucky. In the sense that I've been able, I think, because of the topic that I work on, to fill a gap. And I would say another thing is to be able to say that you can speak to more than one area in academia. So I don't just work on China and East Asian security. I also work, for instance, on nuclear weapons issues and more generally, and historical and contemporary. So if you can broaden out your expertise, that can also help a lot in the job market.
So was that a kind of a journey, I suppose, of looking at your research and thinking about what other themes existed within it and pulling them out and working out how else you could research them?
Definitely, because, I mean, when you go for, and I, even though I was very lucky, I still had to apply for lots of different positions, and I got the experience of it, of going through the interview process and at various institutions. And you have to work out not just, you know, would you be a good fit for them in terms of, you know, your research, your teaching. You have to kind of think, and that requires a lot of tailoring what you do, right, to each department, because each department has their own vibe and their different approach. Yeah. They have different strengths, for instance. So you have to think quite cleverly about how you market yourself. You can't use a generic sort of description of yourself and think it's going to work everywhere, right? There are some university departments that might be very theoretical. There might be some that are very historical. There might be some that have a lot of area expertise or have none. And if you're hired as the only China Asia person, they might expect you to do everything related to China, from the economy, history, to, you see what I'm getting at?
So
the demands on you as an academic might vary quite considerably depending on where you are.
Okay, so it's good almost to get to know quite well the departments that would deal with the topic of your PhD, if you like, to know how you might shape your applications and your profile according to what they're
looking for. And this is where having a good supervisor and a good sort of set of mentors, informal mentors really, and you can ask them, you know, I'm thinking of applying here, what do you know about this department? And you can get a lot of sort of really helpful information in advance of any sort of further stages you take in the application process there. Okay. Yeah.
And that, again, I suppose leads me into, or I suspect, the next question which I had on my list, which is, what were the three most important things that helped you to get here? And I wouldn't be surprised if you were to say it was the kind of, the fact that your topic became the hot topic. You mentioned mentors. What else are the, do you think are the things that helped you to get where you are?
I actually don't think it's related to academia. I think it's just having a really good source of support at home, actually. Okay. And, you know, whether that be a partner, whether that be friends, family. Sometimes family don't if they haven't got an academic background, they might not necessarily understand the nuances of some of the things that people go through. But sometimes actually it's quite nice to take a break from that, right? So I think actually having that home support, whichever form it takes, is really crucial, because I think doing a PhD, as I said, I know that I'm making it sound pretty awful. It's also something that's very exciting, right? And very personal and in terms of your intellectual achievement, right? But it's also, a big strain emotionally and mentally, particularly when ideas aren't going well. You know, we're not machines, we're not robots. We don't write well every day. And sometimes we have bad days on doing our research. And so actually, you know, if you can come home and have a source of support in whichever way that helps you, that's quite important. And I had that. It helps that my partner's an academic too, I guess.
So someone to compare notes with. But okay, so having that sense of sort of something other than the PhD, some people or some things that would be able to support you and maintain that resilience.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, when you're sort of joining the academic labour market. And so then I suppose, finally, what advice, other advice might you have for PhD students and research staff looking to forge a career in academia?
I guess I would say make sure you have your eyes open to say to the fact that I think it's not often spoken about how difficult that period is from completion of PhD to permanent position. That part of the journey or the career journey for an academic is still poorly understood and not sufficiently well known. And it becomes such a shock to the system when you've finished your PhD that I would say that period. I think there's also still a lot of stigma that exists around, you know, those that do PhDs and then don't enter into an academic career. And I think there's still a lot of stigma around that, and I would hope that would go away, because you can actually, a PhD might not set you up for with the best skills for certain jobs. So for instance, I've heard that PhDs can sometimes be sort of they set you up with skills that might not be useful, for instance, for jobs like in government and policy, where you have to think very quickly and you don't have the time to labour over. But on the other hand, there are other jobs that I think having a PhD is hugely helpful in non-academic private sectors, for instance. So I think removing that stigma would be really helpful, I think. And there's nothing, you know, if we all went into academia, we'd have far too many academics, wouldn't we?
Yeah, absolutely. And like you say, I think that, you know, the skills that come from a PhD are, you know, very well valued.
Definitely.
By other sectors outside of academia, and we certainly work with people who want careers both in academia or who are also thinking about moving outside of academia. So there are those support mechanisms for people who might be thinking about that in any case. So thank you so much for all your brilliant insights this morning and for joining me today. We look forward to being joined by our audience again soon for another episode of Careers in Your Ears.